This is the case dot report.
Everyone, and welcome to our podcast on the management of polypharmacy in the emergency department. I'm Professor Katrin Singler, and I'm a geriatrician from Nuremberg in Germany. With me is Dr. Stephen Lim, who is also a geriatrician based at Southampton in the UK. We hope that through this podcast you will be able to appreciate the importance of managing polypharmacy at the front door to ensure that patients' medications are optimized early on in their way during their hospital stay. Maybe to start with the case. Hi, Steve. It's my first week in the A&E department, and I already have seen some very interesting cases. For example, yesterday, we had an 82-year-old woman who was admitted due to a fall. Unfortunately, she broke her arm, and the nurses said that it might have been caused by her medication use. She was on 12 different medications. As a geriatrician, what do you think about this? Is her story actually common?
Yes, unfortunately it is quite common. And we do see that up to a third of all unplanned hospital admissions in older people are related to an adverse drug event.
A third? Isn't that really a lot?
It certainly is, and of course the data does vary depending on the data collection and analysis process, the setting as well as the patient sample included. But indeed, medication-related harm which results in unplanned hospital visit is fairly common in older people. That is why dealing with polypharmacy is high priority. Medication harm puts older people at an increased risk of hospital admissions, but we also see higher risk of other adverse outcomes such as delirium, falls, fractures, and even death. So studies have also suggested up to about half of these adverse drug events in older people might be preventable. So there is a lot that we can do to reduce medication-related harm in older people.
So why do we see these ADEs in older adults then?
Well, the three important risk factors for adverse drug events are polypharmacy, having an increased anticholinergic burden, and the use of potentially inappropriate medications. Additionally, age-related alterations in pharmacodynamics and pharmacokinetics render older people more vulnerable to medication-related harm. And as you can see, these risk factors are highly prevalent among older people. Therefore, it is important that we address the important risk factors which are modifiable to prevent adverse drug events.
I understand how this might explain the high risk of medication-related harm. I'd like to go on to another question I had regarding this issue of medication harm. Sometimes it is a challenge to keep an overview of all the medications that older people with multi-morbidity tasks. Can you give us some tips on how to address this challenge and to be more aware of possible ADEs?
I think this is a crucial question. The first step in getting things right would be to perform an accurate and thorough medication reconciliation. And I cannot understate its importance. You really have to start with the correct information before you can dream of making any meaningful changes in the medication regimen of any given patient.
How would you propose to proceed with performing this reconciliation?
I think firstly, gather as much information as possible about the patient's medications, including regular prescriptions and also, importantly, over-the-counter medications. Don't just assume that a medication list printout is always the correct one. It's very important to be cautious. Then document clearly the name of the drug, the dose, the form of application, frequency. And at this stage, you can identify any recent changes to the medications, including dose alterations or medications that have been started recently. And remember that when taking a history from patients, it's very important also to inquire about compliance and concordance. Next, it is important to try and identify possible drug-related admissions. So do consider whether an adverse drug event could be a contributing factor for the patient's presenting symptoms or reason for admission. Take into consideration drug-drug interactions, that is to say drug interactions between two or more medications, and drug disease interactions, such as falls due to orthostatic hypotension in a Parkinson's disease patient. Then you should also determine the anticholinergic burden, as this is an important modifiable risk factor for delirium. The next step then would be to perform a medication review. And this involves a screening for potentially inappropriate medications in a standardized manner. The use of a screening tool such as the stop-start criteria can often be very helpful. So when performing the medication review, it is important to take into account patient preferences, the primary clinical concern, but also the comorbidity burden as well as the frailty status and prognosis of your patients. And finally, do not forget also to screen for under-treatment.
Ooh, this seems quite a lot. Do you think this is feasible in the ED? How much time would this take?
Well, it certainly will take some time. Taking a medication history and reviewing the medication therapy can easily take up to about 10 to 15 minutes, even when you're well-trained in performing them. Nonetheless, it is crucial that medication reviews are performed early on to prevent further harm to patients. Of course, we are aware that emergency departments are staffed and run differently in different countries. And importantly, if a comprehensive medication review cannot be performed in the emergency department, then do communicate the need for a comprehensive review in the patient's medical notes so that subsequent healthcare professionals caring for the patient, including pharmacists or pharmacy assistants, clinicians and geriatricians, can then perform the medication review. And in certain settings and situations, you could consider referring the patient to a geriatric day hospital or a clinical pharmacist for medicines optimization.
Okay, so we have to take into account a high baseline risk of medication harm.
Yes, that's true. Always have a high clinical suspicion of medication harm, particularly among older people who are on multiple medications.
It's good to know that we can do something about this issue by doing a medication reconciliation, evaluating the medication harm, and by performing a medication review.
Yes, that's absolutely true. It may seem like there is a lot to do, but it is certainly necessary to ensure that our patients are given the best care.
You also mentioned the start-stop criteria. Can you give some more practical information about this?
So the stop-start criteria is a well-validated tool used to facilitate medication review in older people. It can help identify medications where the risk outweigh the benefits in older people and vice versa. So the aim of the tool is to ultimately to reduce inappropriate medications and to ensure that patients are on the right medications. And this can be administered by the physicians, general practitioners, and pharmacists. The tool has actually been endorsed by multiple organizations and is used widely in research trials as well as in clinical practice. And it is also very useful for training and education purposes.
Can you give us some examples of drugs that are often related to ED admissions?
But we have data from multiple databases, and they tend to all tell us the same thing over and over again. And certainly some drug classes seem to be more frequently implicated than others with drug-related ED admissions. Some of the common classes of drugs include anticoagulants, insulins, diuretics, non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drugs, and antiplatelet therapies. I think anticoagulants and antidiabetic medications together comprise about 50 to 60% of all adverse drug events. Additionally, psychotropic agents, antineoplastics, and immunosuppressants are also common culprits. So we've observed that there are a variety of commonly used drugs that have a high anticholinergic burden.
What do you mean by this anticholinergic burden?
These are agents that are known to cause more anticholinergic side effects as a result of their pharmacological mechanism of action. And we know that anticholinergic burden is a strong predictor of cognitive and physical impairment. This burden can be categorized or even quantified, and there are several tools out there that you can use to score anticholinergic burden. But as a general rule, it is important to remember that a higher anticholinergic burden, regardless of which score or scale you use, is associated with worse outcomes in older people.
Could you perhaps give some concrete examples?
I mean, some of the common medications that we use would be things like antihistamines, opiate painkillers like tramadol or codeine, antispasmodics like oxybutynin, tolteridine or solifenacin, bronchiolytic inhalers such as ipratropium bromide or tiotropium, mydretics like atropine or scopolamine or hyoscine, and antidepressants or tricyclic antidepressants like amitriptyline, but also other drugs such as carbamazepine or oxycarbamazepine. There are lots of them out there.
Okay, we have now covered many things already, I think. All of this sounds interesting, but also very complex. Most drugs concern chronic therapies. These admitted patients would have been on these medications for a long time. Is there anything I can do now, today, in the ED to reduce the risk of ADE and their consequences?
This is an excellent question. I think there are many things that you can start doing today, actually. And I'll try and keep this short just to give you some practical tips. Whenever you start new therapies in the emergency department, take into account the overall medication harm. And with this in mind, always prescribe cautiously and consider deprescribing if appropriate. Avoid potentially inappropriate medications. You can use the stop-start criteria, for example, to aid in your decision-making. And if there's any uncertainty, consider consulting geriatricians or pharmacists for additional support. One thing I would say is to always calculate the glomerular filtration rate or the creatinine clearance rather than just relying on the creatinine and adjust medication doses accordingly. We would also suggest not to use benzodiazepines as a first-line therapy in the management of delirium in older people, except perhaps for alcohol withdrawal. And particularly in older people, avoid using non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drugs or tramadol due to the high risk of adverse drug reactions in patients with severe pain. Do consider using newer opioids. Of course, we know that practices do vary across countries, and some medications are more commonly used in other countries, and I would suggest referring to your local guidance, but the main point is to try and reduce their use as much as is possible.
Mm-hmm. Are there any other things to consider when you plan to discharge the patient from the ED, prior to discharge maybe even?
At this stage it's important to appreciate the real risk of any further avoidable medication harm. So do reassess the patient's drug regime, take into consideration patient preferences, life expectancy, comorbidity burden, and also overall feasibility of taking the medication. Always inform your patient and or their caregiver by handing out a prescription plan. And this must include the name of the medication, the dose, frequency, and reason for prescription. Ensure that the patient's healthcare providers or general practitioners are informed about any changes, and ensure that the patients are taught how to take the medications correctly.
Okay. Thank you very much, Steve. This was very helpful, but also quite a lot of new information, actually. If you would like to look up some of the information on the tools mentioned later on, where can I find them?
I fully agree. And this might seem a lot at first, but I think it all comes down to acknowledging the importance of appropriate medication use, and particularly in older people who experience unplanned admissions to the emergency department. And of course, by performing this regularly, you will get better at it, and it will take less time as you get better at it. Now, we have summarized all that we've talked about here in this podcast on a poster, and do encourage you to visit our website on www.jerryemeurope.eu, and do have a look at the guidelines section for further information.
So thank you very much, Steve, for this very informative discussion on the very interesting topic. And thank you very much for tuning in to our podcast, and we hope that this has been very useful for you as well.
Well, it's been a real pleasure, Catherine, and I enjoyed making this podcast with you. So thank you very much, and goodbye.